This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
The Senate president said a year and a half ago, come to us with a single package, teams. Said to the White Sox and the Bears, come to us with a single package. That made sense then, and it makes sense now. So I would expect that there would be something put together. Now, you know, the White Sox have some other issues they're dealing with, as we all know. And I think that's higher on the priority list right now to deal with. And I expect they will deal with them well. That all having been said, I don't think the White Sox will get shut out of a tax source that was passed to keep them in Chicago. So they will be a player in this in any event.
Not to be naive, but what are you referring to? The baseball issues or other issues?
Well, let's say both. Let me not go any further on that, but let's say both.
Fascinating. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
15 days later.
Yeah, yeah. It was a hint of what's to come,
yeah.
And it was interesting, and John Greenberg with The Athletic broke a great story that offers hope. John joins us now on The Score Hotline, which is brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Great work, John. Absolutely. You offered some hope for the future for Sox fans. After I fainted, I was really pleased to see it. Welcome to the program, buddy.
Thank you. I'm already in Indy because we have some meetings for The Athletic before the combine starts, but I figure Brad Biggs already talked football with you. So,
that's right.
You know, we can talk about this.
Yeah, we moved on from Biggs' time an hour ago, John, but I think that...
Just like the song goes,
exactly.
Brad Biggs talks football with you. I like the reference.
Right.
So when you talk about the reaction to your story, number one, what has it been? And secondly, how did you interpret the White Sox official response, which basically acknowledges the offer has no impact on the leadership or operations of the White Sox and does not provide a path to control?
Well, so, their reaction, and, we kind of went to them pretty much last, after we got all the information, which is, usually what you do. It surprised me a little bit, that last sentence of it. The beginning didn't surprise me, but the last sentence that it would provide no control because everyone we had talked to at least had the belief or, based on real information they had, were pretty adamant this would have control, because why else would a guy with that much money, who doesn't need like a big group, this isn't Dave Stewart like fronting a group, why would he pass up a chance to buy a team outright to spend more money to be a silent partner to Jerry Reinsdorf? It's not like he's going to get a World Series ring out of this anytime soon, being a silent partner. He's not basking in the reflected glory of the team. It would really only make sense if there was some kind of path. And, one person I talked to compared it to the situation in Cleveland, where a guy named David Blitzer, who's a minority owner of the Devils and 76ers, he got in 2022, he got a 25% stake of the Guardians with the option, I think, to buy out or to get outright control in 6 years. So someone compared the situation what they thought would be like that. But, you know, if you think about it, it doesn't surprise you that Reinsdorf wouldn't want to. He doesn't want to let me dictate, you know, my story dictate, like, how he's going to announce or how
exactly.
He's going to create this, right? I'm sure he's like, who's this putz calling? You know, why is he bothering us? So I'm not surprised, because otherwise, like, listen, think of if he, you know, I think he just wants to be on his own time. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, listen, I mean, the reality of life is that if the guy is in pursuit of the twins and then gets a phone call from Reinsdorf or a family member, whatever, and decides, and they were fairly down the road, right, John, according to the reporting, and then decides, you know what, I'm going to up my investment with the Sox. There's no way you do that, in my opinion, if you're a billionaire owner without somebody telling you, without an arrangement, let's put it that way, without getting word from a guy, I'm going to do it for two more years and you can take it. That seems like an obvious reaction to this story. Jerry turns 89 tomorrow.
Right. And, you know, it could be, listen, he could be, you know, threading the needle between truth and being obstinate and say, you know, maybe the deal's a first right of refusal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be something like that instead of just a guarantee like, okay, you get this in 5 years or 4 years. So, you know, it could be just the first right of refusal. But, you know, everyone from people involved in the deal to people like pretty high up in baseball circles, you know, felt that this was the case. And this is a story that, you know, no one knew about. Like, everyone said I was the first to call. But, you know, it once we started doing the reporting, we found out that in the upper echelons of baseball, people were talking about this.
So Justin Ishbia, we know that he's building a mansion in Winnetka. We know that he bigger than Tom Ricketts's, and he grew up in Detroit, and his brother owns the Suns. What else do we know, John, in terms of what kind of owner he might be? And we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but we're already kind of a little ahead of ourselves. Does this signify a guy that would run the team and go deep into his pockets as everybody would want him to go?
It sounds like it. I mean, look what they're spending. You know, they haven't been, you know, super successful in Phoenix right now with the way this team is built, but they've certainly spent some money. And, you know, you also look at the way, if you look at what Matt Ishbia did, what he announced in Phoenix this season, is they had a simple thing, a $2 value menu at games, because, you know, the price of concessions is very high. So that's great. That's great news. I mean, I would assume, you know, there's one question someone even had to me is, like, in baseball-wise, is would he start pumping money in before you know, he takes control? Did they bring him in, and is he going to start spending money? And I don't even mean on players, but, like, obviously the stadium stuff. You guys had the soundbite about that. You know, is he brought in to help, because, you know, to bring money to that? Listen, the guy's worth supposedly around $5 billion. He's built, like you said, he's building a house. The price of his house supposedly is more expensive than any contract the White Sox have ever given out.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. You know,
it's rumored to be like around $80 million. Someone told me $100 for this compound he's building in Winnetka.
Yeah.
I do know he's fighting with the people in Winnetka about a land swap and a dog beach and, like, beach access. And so people are kind of annoyed with him in Winnetka right now in some parts.
Wait until he tries the South Loop.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, to be a rich Cubs a Cubs fan in Winnetka might not be too thrilled with him, but I think he would be pretty popular. I mean, taking over, you know, Jerry's been on this team for so long. I think he'd be welcomed with open arms.
Yeah, it's interesting that dynamic, because you know, whether he ends up spending money or doing anything, it'd just be different. And you know, we heard all the chants of sell the team at the end of the season, and we know that Sox fans are kind of embittered about everything that's going on, and frankly, the idea of prospects no longer works for me after already being told there were tons of prospects and then watching them fade away, and it did not work. So I think there's a certain skepticism that has kicked in among Sox fans. I'm wondering, John, if the timing of this could be perfect for Jerry just because of the perceived problem in baseball in terms of financing the league and the internal problems that could really lead to another strike or certainly a change that maybe Jerry no longer wants to fight.
Yeah, that's, and you know what's really interesting about that too is I was thinking about it with talking about this with someone in baseball about the idea of Ishbia and the idea of waiting. Let's say, you know, waiting a few years and like, it would that be interminable for him? But really, Ishbia, I wouldn't want to take over before the CBA, before the new CBA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't want to be one. You don't want to be seen as a hawk. You don't want to be seen fighting with fans. We saw how that worked for the White Sox before. And two, like the. Pretty much, from what I hear, every decision is being made with the idea of the CBA in mind. Like the Cubs stuff, their lack of, you know, maybe, you know, yep, their non-aggressiveness at Bregman, that's CBA related. And a lot of people think in the city of Chicago, like a guy like Ishbia taking over is going to put pressure on Ricketts too.
Is your sense that overall Jerry Reinsdorf is resisting or resenting this involvement of Justin Ishbia, or is it your sense that maybe he's just resisting and resenting the interest in Justin Ishbia's interest in it because he does not want to make this public?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely the latter there. From everything we heard, Jerry's the one that pursued it, or, you know, Jerry and Mike or whatever, you know, once, because he was already, we didn't know he was already that limited partner until I think Sportico broke it last month.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we knew that Michael Reinsdorf and his brother had bought up limited shares at a pretty low valuation in 2021, but we didn't know that Justin was part of the money behind that deal. Like, I know of another Chicago area billionaire who put money into that too, and that's originally who I thought was buying the team, but we didn't know that yet. So the fact that he's already part of the family, so to speak, to me, I think that speaks to, you know, Jerry's always said, I think it goes back to 2013, when he said that he would tell his kids to sell the White Sox when he passes away.
Right.
And keep the Bulls. But to me, this gives him more control to pick his successor before he leaves and to have it, you know, while we can criticize Jerry all we want. I do it, you know, a couple times a week sometimes. But he has said multiple times he wants to put the team in a better place before he goes, whether it's a stadium, whether it's, you know, picking Chris Getz, who he thinks is going to work out, you know, all that stuff. And I think this would be another case of Jerry. You're right. He wants to be on his own timeline. He's not, listen, Jerry doesn't wake up being like, John Greenberg is going to push me around today and make an announcement I don't want to make.
Yeah, no, we know about how Jerry operates. And yeah, I mean, right. but he is turning 89. I mean, it does get to a point, and he's talked about it, that he's got nothing else going on and he likes it. He goes there. I would imagine that last year took a toll on Jerry too. That was a terrible, awful season. They lose more than any. I mean, it's a dark mark on his legacy, frankly. And now they have reduced payroll. It just feels like they're gearing up for something bad happening while they're waiting for the good young players to turn up eventually.
Right. And think about not even just last year. Think about the last 3 years, right? Tony La Russa steps down. Then they have a bad season, or last 2 years, I guess. You know, La Russa's sick. Then he steps down, and then they have a terrible season. He has to fire Kenny and Rick. And firing Kenny, I think, probably took a toll on him. And then, last year they follow it up with the worst season in baseball history. So going into 89, I mean, you would think that he's going to start getting tired of this, but he does like being at the park. And the fact is, this is kind of like, the way I think about it is kind of estate planning. You know, he's basically estate planning this team.
This is definitely part of what would be perceived as a succession plan, and a very intelligent, smart, and I think popular succession plan, just because of the possibility with ownership that would be enthusiastic and about infusing money into the project and product and all those things. John, I just wonder, like, until we get to the next step, the in-between step, it's a pretty big project in terms of the stadium project. Where do you think that stands now, and how is that related, if at all, to this other situation with Ishbia?
I think it's probably definitely related, because Jerry's, you know, pretty consumed with getting the stadium stuff situated. You know, I have no idea, because, you know, everything I had heard is that the 78's more likely to go to the Chicago Fire because they have an owner that's willing to pay for the stadium himself. Now, would this change that, you know, that idea? Because, HPA technically could do that. You know, he could fund this all on his own without asking for a lot in state funds. You know, is the 78 even big enough for a baseball stadium? I don't know. You know, could they fix up? You know, I've really heard it. Like, you know, really dedicating themselves and putting money into the area around the current ballpark and like building up the area. You know, instead of parking lots, doing what they're doing at the United Center now with this mixed use stuff. You know, where they're going to parking garages instead of these huge lots and putting more things in that. Could that be a case? Yeah. You know, I don't, like we said, I don't foresee him moving the team to Nashville, but even though he does have business interests there, that is true. But I don't think you build an $80 million house, buy the team, you know, down the road,
right,
and then move it. And we've also heard that baseball doesn't want, after the Oakland-Vegas fiasco, they don't want teams moving into their expansion markets because that takes money out of the owner's pockets.
I'm curious, like, how much control can Justin Ishbia get if he buys, if these people that are currently are investors want to sell their shares, want to sell with the evaluation, get out of it, right? They've been waiting a long time and now it's a ton of money. And I'm sure that all those people have their own issues within their own families and their own succession plans. But I'm just curious how much shares of ownership can he get and how much influence will he then have?
It's a great question because he's going to get, you know, I suppose people think he already owns like maybe 5%, but the way the White Sox is set up is there's two corporations, I believe, within the ownership. I read this in a story from some original court documents, but so there's a limited partner group and then there's the general partner group. And what Jerry has is the majority of the general partner group that controls the team. So I would assume Ishbia is just buying part into the minority part right now, but I do wonder if he's going to get a seat on the board. If you look at the current board of the White Sox, you can go on their website, and then I went and looked up all their ages on LexisNexis. The spring chicken of the White Sox board is Jay Pinsky, who's 76.
Wow.
The next youngest person turns 86 next month.
Wow.
There's one guy, Lee Stern's still on the board. You know, the soccer maestro, 98.
And as you said, John, back in 2013 – Jerry Reinsdorf, I think, proudly said that no one will know how much I own.
Yes.
Nobody will know how much of this team that actually I own because we don't have any access to that kind of information, and he proudly uses that. So they could be closer, very far away.
Hostile takeover. Is that humanly possible?
Well, I was joking that some White Sox fans are going to go January 6th on the stadium just to get Ishbia in charge. But hopefully that does not happen.
As one texter points out, John, is it worth knowing and remembering that even though you scoff at the Nashville possibility, he did go to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
He's a minority owner of the soccer team there. But, I just don't. It just doesn't seem.
No, it doesn't. No, I think that's being facetious.
He loves baseball.
He's building a mansion. Yeah. This is a Chicago story. A story that
he
Sox
doesn't
fans.
Wanna, he doesn't want to go to Minnesota. Why would he want to go to Nashville?
Exactly.
Right.
I like it.
Yeah.
But, John, I guess in your mind, you know how this works. You know how the fan bases in for every team in Chicago operates. How excited should White Sox fans be about this latest development?
I mean, I think they should be excited, but like, you know, we said it's going to be some time. You know, there's not going to be immediate dividends. I think they'd be really excited if we could find out if he was pumping money in early. Then it would be like, you know, but I do think it's at least the prospect of a brighter future and what's going to probably be 110 loss season. You know, it could be like, it could be pretty bad. They don't have much talent on this team, so... You know, if anything, the Sox can be excited. They can find one thing to be excited about, you know, besides like the 2005 team coming back again. I think it would probably be the idea that there's, you know, it's not just our speculation that there's actually something happening with who the next owner of the team will be.
Yeah, great work, John. Honestly, really,
Thank you.
Made my day reading that story.
Excellent story. Yeah. Great reporting. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's John Greenberg with The Athletic. It is, you know, any Sox fan should get on that site, read his story, read the story from Minnesota. That's in
Dan Hayes from Minnesota. He used to cover the White Sox.
Yes.
He's familiar with the inner workings of the front office and ownership. So they collaborated on this story, which really, I think, was the biggest story of the weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just if you're a Sox fan, you'll come away from it feeling differently, which is all you ask for. And as you heard John say, even if they lose 110 games, that's a huge improvement, which tells you everything you need to know.
Can we mention the Cubs when we come back? They're undefeated, 4-0.
They came back from the brink.
They did.
Yeah, we'll talk Cubs next. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's almased.com.
Nice. We might see some speed right here.
Yes. Number 4 headed to second.
That is not an easy stand-up double for a lot of people.
I love, by the way, how anytime when he gets about midway to second and he does that sideways kind of glide in. And right there, yep. He knows... I'm safe.
The guy's got some swagger to his game. It's real. It's not. He's not doing it to try and look cooler than the next guy. It's who he is. It's how he lives. And Pete's going to be amazing for us this year.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. That was Nico Horner. He was in the booth for the Marquee Network as they broadcast the Cubs game, and that's Pete Crow Armstrong going 3 of 3. That's not an easy double for a lot of people. He had a double on one of them. because he's so bloody fast. He's
so fast.
Dead solid as a player.
As a stand-up double.
And he's hitting the ball. This is the stuff we asked for, David.
Thing of beauty.
Yes.
He's running. And by the way, Nico Horner, very good in the booth. No stranger to this radio station. As we know, fans of the afternoon show hear him every week as a staple. And he's very good at that.
Yeah, he's very good.
He's very good.
Stanford man.
Stanford guy. Bright, articulate, and
Stanford
definitely insightful.
Man. Yes. Not a guy.
All right. He's a Stanford man.
Sorry.
He's a Stanford man. And Pico Armstrong is somebody that is definitely off to a pretty good start in spring training. Now we're talking about the way he's hitting the baseball, not the way he's coloring his hair.
That's right.
That's a nice little progression. Also,
the way he's coloring his hair is just a reflection of his age.
It is,
right?
Or
it's
his personality. He's a look-at-me guy, but you know what? He can get away with it because he definitely has a lot to look at, and he's flamboyant, and he's fun, and he's definitely what the Cubs need in that lineup. I'd like to see him at the top of the order. Let's wait and see. But interesting that he's wearing number four because
– That was a Jed Hoyer, right?
Jed Hoyer told him he needed a fast guy number. And 52 was not a fast guy number. Uh-oh. And as the story goes, apparently they were shooting baskets with Dansby Swanson, I believe. And Jed Hoyer came up and was essentially said, if I hit this, you're changing numbers. And he hit it. Nice job, Jed. And PCA gladly changed from 52 to 4. I'm relieved. I didn't like 52. You know I'm a numbers guy. I didn't like 52. And it just seemed like a guy who got on the last round of jerseys at spring training. And like, okay, here, kid.
But in fairness, there are probably fans of his that purchased a 52 jersey, and now he's changed his number.
My sense is not many.
Okay. And so now there'll be a bunch of fours, but there won't be any 52s?
There'll be new fours being produced, being sold, being worn. I don't think there were a lot of people lining up to put on 52. It's not a good number for a center fielder. Maybe if you're a starting pitcher.
Or your
maybe
middle
for a reliever
linebacker.
Or middle linebacker. It's a slow number. Jed's right. Jed knows there's a numerology that you get caught up in. Number four is an excellent number for a center fielder.
And we want to let everyone know, keep listening for your chance to win your way into our Cubs season opener watch party. You can. It's a watch and listen party at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. We're going to have everyone come in their 52 jersey or their 4 jersey, and they can be a part of a studio audience for the Cubs against the Dodgers. The game's in Tokyo. It starts at 5 a.m. on March 18th.
Wait, 5 a.m.?
5 a.m., buddy.
5 a.m.
You got to get in here earlier.
All right.
Is that humanly possible for both of us?
That's early.
Yeah. 5 a.m. it starts, and then stick around, and we'll have a special broadcast of our show, kind of a post-game show after the conclusion of the Cubs broadcast. It's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. This is the first time that we've ever been preempted by the Cubs because they're in Japan.
Yes, I remember last year being able to watch the game while we're doing the show. I think it was Dodgers-Padres in Japan. This time we'll be preempted by the great Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer and Zach. So that's okay. That's okay.
How does Zach feel about going to Japan?
I
wonder how he'll be received.
Zach had a big weekend. The Paul had a home game. They retired Dave Corzine's number, but they lost to the Butler Bulldogs.
I knew my brother graduated from Notre Dame with a girl who went to Japan to teach English. And her problem was every time she got on the subway, people would she was a blonde-haired girl, really blonde. People would come up and just touch her hair. They were just not used to blondes those days.
That's unusual.
That's very unusual. I just wonder if you're not.
Unusual.
What do you do
if
you're a Japanese dude? And a ginger-haired genius is sitting on the train.
I don't know.
Do you
very
rub
tempting.
That stuff?
I hope not. That sounds like an international incident waiting to happen. You know, I spent a week in Japan. I've talked about
know,
that before.
You did a story on
Sadahara. Oh, yeah. That was about 15 years ago. It wasn't the greatest week of my life, I have to say that.
Oh, really? Were you lost in time? You know, what's
lost
that
in translation,
yeah.
maybe?
Yeah.
The Tribune put, I had a translator that met me there, and so he very, very solid, very, very professional. I just didn't have a great time.
Was it your body clock off?
Body clock was off, a little jet lagged. The language barrier was a bit of a problem. I loved going to a couple nights. I went to a couple nights of Japanese baseball. It is an experience that you never forget. I was in Fukuoka, and it was
keep it clean.
I am keeping it clean. It was fun meeting Sadahara Oh, but yeah. I was ready to go after about 3 days.
Really?
I was there for about five.
That's good to hear.
Or six.
That's interesting.
But I was ready to go. The food situation. I'm not a big Japanese food guy.
So you're not a sushi man?
No, not really. I know I've been told that's a mistake.
Yeah.
I know people are going to be, oh, of course you're not. But I'm just not.
I got to be honest with you.
I will eat it.
I think sushi is the greatest beer food since pizza. That if you really like to have a beer.
Highly disagree.
Having a beer and some sushi.
I couldn't disagree more.
That's living.
I don't know if that's living.
That's excellent.
I don't know that. You wake up the next morning feeling the...
No, you. I mean, you know, they
depends
give
how much
you,
beer you have and
yeah,
how much
exactly.
sushi you have.
They give you like a nice big beer, and then the.
What's
sushi
your favorite
is
go-to sushi? What's your favorite sushi flavor? Well,
we have a couple places that we go, but I'm an ebi shrimp guy, right?
Okay.
So I really like the ebi roll. At one place we go, it's just so good, and then we go to this other place where I just get regular little tuna, little hot tuna. Sushi is good.
Yeah, if I'm going to have tuna, I'm going to probably just have a nice tuna salad sandwich. I'm not going to have sushi.
You know where I first got into sushi was at those Super Bowl parties, believe it or not. Like post-Super Bowl, you go and they'd have like a big party and the only thing left was the sushi. And I was like, yeah, what the
two
hell?
In the morning, you're pounding sushi.
And I'm like, hey, this sounds fantastic.
Give me another beer. Yeah. This is great beer food.
Yeah, it's great beer food.
Especially when you haven't eaten in 6 hours.
I was definitely beered up after the game. It's the end of the season.
Right,
there's
I get
a
it.
Sense of relief.
So back to Arizona. I think the biggest thing over the weekend, the Cubs won. They came back, as you said. Matt Spiegel did the game. Nice job, Matt.
Yeah, congratulations.
Did a couple
man.
Games. I think he's unbeaten
as
a play-by-play guy next to Coombe. Cade Horton faced pitching faced hitting.
Cade Horton.
Faced hitters. And that's big because I don't know where he fits into this season.
Who?
Cade Horton.
There's a Horton here. Who?
At one point was their highest rated pitching prospect. I don't know if he still is, but he was quoted in Sun Times this morning. He's working back from a shoulder strain that wiped out most of last year.
Right.
And he was supposed to be in a Cubs uniform at Wrigley Field in July of last year. Never happened because of the injury. I now wonder what does that mean for this season, because the Cubs need guys like him, Ben Brown, those kind of young pitchers to step forward and make some progress this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that again, when we talk about the Cubs, the bullpen was a problem last year. There were so many guys that were moved up, were out of position, whatever way you want to term it, and they ended up blowing, what was it, 25 saves, something like that.
Yep, 26.
If you split that, and you are a significantly better team, right? You split that, and they seem to have brought in a ton of arms in the bullpen, and some of whom are unrecognizable. You know, you see them pitching, you're kind of like, who's that? Oh, yeah, they brought him in. You remember that. But if their bullpen is an improvement, then it's going to be a different season.
Yeah, because I don't think that Horton necessarily – at this stage of his career, translates into the rotation yet?
No.
I think he's got to find a niche. Maybe it's AAA this year and he's a starter. Then you don't bring him up until you need a spot start here or there. But you need some power arms in that bullpen to give Tommy Hotovy some options, Craig Counsell some options, and develop. You know, I think we heard from Jordan Wicks. He was a good guest on Inside the Clubhouse as well, talking about his maturation. Bruce asked him a question about his physique and how he's a little bit more toned and in shape this year, which is interesting. Guys like that, guys who don't think about every day, but are still in the system, still ascending, and still can contribute to a winning team this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that we're definitely seeing, I know spring training doesn't matter, and I know the fact that they're undefeated in spring training is fairly comical, but the reality is they haven't lost a game yet. They were down 5-0. They came back and they won 6-5. I don't find any fault in that. I think it's kind of fun, and it's representative of the kind of team that they're putting together, which is a lot of depth and a team that has different aspects to it that you might not think of immediately.
And Justin Steele was dealing too.
And that's great, but you're worried about Matt Shaw. You're worried about the oblique injury that has him only hitting right now in spring
training. What a buzzkill.
That is a buzzkill.
What a buzzkill.
And you know, Owen Casey, you don't really need another outfielder, but he's unable to
play. We're talking about good things. You're right, though.
I'm only saying
it's sobering.
The Shaw thing is the problem.
The Shaw
for me.
Thing because of his expectations for this year and because of what they're counting on him to do. Let's face it, because they didn't get Bregman. If they got Bregman and Matt Shaw had an oblique, you're like, take your time, start at AAA, heal slowly, however you want to heal. But now they need him. Now he's in a position where he's got to not only get healthy, but get good and get to the point where you count on him. He's an asset more than liability. And so, yeah, that's what spring training is about. The Owen Casey news was disappointing. He rationalized it the way you would want him to. It's a good time of the year to have an injury like this.
Right.
But it's a setback for a young hitter that you felt like was just on the verge of being a guy that's like, he's the next one up, next man up.
Right, right. No question
They got
about
rid
that.
Of, they designated Alex Canario for assignment. We'll see what that future holds for him.
I know the White Sox have a lot of major leaguers under contract in their outfield, and maybe that's an area where they don't need another player. I would go get that guy. I would, if he's available for nothing, what would hold you back from taking a look
Oscar Colas. Try something? Oscar Colas might.
He's not making this team. I'm sadly. You said it earlier, though. The biggest news with the Cubs, the guy that you're going to fall in love with and watch all year long is Kyle Tucker. And him and what he does will be a big influence.
Great seeing him in a Cub uniform.
No question.
It was great to see Justin Steele strike out 5 2 innings. It was better to see Kyle Tucker in a Cub uniform yesterday.
And that's all it takes. Just look at the guy in the uniform because you're going to be watching him all year long. And he's going to get a ton of money in free agency. So he's going to have a good year.
From either the Cubs or the Sox.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Sox are now in.
Sox may have some money.
That's pretty funny. Mike Florio will join us next. We'll talk some NFL with Mike Mullienhaus, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We can't be beat!
We can't be beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
What's that? Gator!
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mullienhaus on 670 The Score.
Mullienhaus, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys, I'll be with you in a second here. I'm just finishing up the email that I have to send to NBC justifying all of my work activities last week. If I don't send it by 10 Eastern, they're treating it as a resignation.
Wow. That's quite an opening, Mike.
That is different than the time we called you and you had to finish up your conversation with Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm kidding.
I know.
NBC has given me until Tuesday to send the email.
Okay, that's great.
Mike, I think the Matthew Stafford story is one of the more interesting ones because even at the age of 37, he still has it. He's looking for more money. The guy makes $27 million. The going price of quarterbacks is now over 50, right? How is that why they put him on? Is that why they are willing to trade him or willing to let him look around? And is there any possibility he winds up with the Vikings?
And the top of the market is $60 million right now. Dak Prescott got there week one of the 2024 season. There are 9 guys with new money averages of $50 million or more. Patrick Mahomes is at 45, but his cash flow simulates Joe Burrow. So there's 10 guys that are making really good money. And yeah, Stafford's at $27 million. He's got a big cap number of $49 million plus. But the Rams for the past couple of years have been in this weird posture with Stafford where it feels like they've been looking for a graceful exit ramp from the relationship. Back when the Jets were trying to get Aaron Rodgers, there were rumors that the Rams were hoping that it would fall apart and the Jets would come calling then for Matthew Stafford. He was just days away from a $59 million guarantee. So I feel like they've been looking and considering options, On the surface, I would presume they want to go younger because their team is younger. But if they can go dramatically cheaper, and that's where Aaron Rodgers comes into play, somebody who's very experienced in league personnel matters reached out to me on Saturday once this Stafford thing started to really bubble and say, here's my prediction. Stafford to the Giants, Rodgers to the Rams. Because Rodgers is desperate, according to this person, to play for the Rams. He'll take, presumably, a sweetheart deal if he gets the team he wants. And so if the Rams look at it as, here's what Stafford wants versus here's what Rodgers wants, they could save a lot of money, dollar for dollar, arguably do better. Although right now Stafford is, I think, significantly better than Rodgers. But Sean McVay could think, hey, I'll take Rodgers, I'll make my system fit him, and we'll go far next year with Rodgers, and we finally move on from Stafford. So it's weird. It's been there for a while. You would think that these two sides would work together as long as they could, but it feels like Stafford and the Rams are moving toward an exit.
So, Mike, for the first time in 3 years, the Bears go to the combine without holding the number one overall pick. They pick 10th. And just curious, what is the national storyline? What's the biggest deal going on this week? Is it the fact that there aren't any quarterbacks that are clear-cut number one overall possibilities, or the fact that maybe Travis, what is the biggest story at the combine?
Well, and the combine is not just the underwear Olympics and whatever other news flows from the gathering of the college players who are entering the NFL. It is really the first and in many ways the biggest everyone is there convention of the offseason. So I think free agency is still front and center. This quarterback carousel that begins with Stafford and Rodgers, where does it go from there? What happens with Kirk Cousins? What happens with Sam Darnold? What happens with Russell Wilson? What do the Steelers do? There's a lot of dominoes that need to fall on the quarterback carousel, especially when you consider this year's quarterback class. It's not going to have that six guys taken in 12 picks that could have, you know, a success rate of 100% by the time it's all said and done when these guys flourish into their NFL careers. So I think a lot of the conversation this week and a lot of the rumors that come out will shed light on where some of these free agents are going to go. It's tampering central. You're not allowed to talk to the agents who represent the upcoming free agents. There will be meetings galore. There will be a clear understanding for any of the big free agents who's interested and who's not well in advance of the opening of the free agency period. And Indianapolis is where it all happens. And we'll be there the next 4 days. And our main goal is we get access to coaches, to GMs. We get access to the new prospects. It's always great to talk to them and see what they're made of, how they communicate. And last year, the one big thing we picked up, we asked all the players, who's the toughest guy you ever faced at the college level? All the SEC defensive players said without an instant of hesitation, Jaden Daniels, Jaden Daniels, Jaden Daniels. And that was the first time that, I mean, we knew he was a top pick, but that was the first time Chris Sims and I were like, uh-oh, this guy might be something special. And the facts ultimately proved that to be true.
What are the Vikings going to do at quarterback? Do you have any idea? Are they moving on because the price of playing poker has gone up too much?
Well, I think that they want to see what J.J. McCarthy has. I think Daniel Jones becomes this year's Sam Darnold for them. And there's a key point that Sims and I kind of pulled the thread on earlier today on PFT Live. Daniel Jones chose to join the Vikings active roster the Thursday before wild card weekend. He was on the practice squad, and if he had stayed on the practice squad, he would have had a 2-month head start on free agency. He would have been able to sign with anyone. He could have taken visits. He could have signed at any time. Once he joins the active roster, he's stuck until the start of free agency. Why did he join the active roster then before the playoff game? And this was something that we suggested at the time. If the Vikings had won, but Sam Darnold hadn't been stellar, the Vikings were thinking about pivoting to Daniel Jones for the divisional round. So that gives you an idea of what the Vikings think of Daniel Jones. I think he's going to be back in Minnesota. He gave up that shot at extended free agency to join the roster because I think the Vikings thought he was ready to be unleashed. He may be the guy who's the 1B to the J.J. McCarthy 1A or vice versa for 2025.
Does Justin Fields have a market?
I think so. I think that the Steelers are the most likely destination for him. You know, there's still a question of how he can develop as a passer. We know that he's an explosive runner. And if we've learned nothing else from the last year or two in the NFL, if you give up on a first-round quarterback, there's a chance he's going to come back around and prove elsewhere that he can get it done. From Baker Mayfield, now Geno Smith wasn't a first-round pick, but it's the same idea. Sam Darnold, guys that came in with good pedigrees, it didn't work out at first, and then eventually they get there. I think the Steelers are going to find a way to keep him and let Russell Wilson go, but we'll see. Maybe Aaron Rodgers ends up in Pittsburgh if he doesn't end up with the Rams.
You're the best, Mike. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio. Always fun.
Why not Matthew Stafford in Pittsburgh?
That is an interesting idea. I think because you'd have to give up so much, and then you'd have to change the way you run your team.
Curious. Just
yeah,
curious.
I think that's interesting. All right. 312-644-6767. We got Cole Wright's going to join us from the Marquee Network. We'll talk with him about what's going on with the Cubs next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.